This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden.
You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for the Matt McNeil Show today. And we already have somebody on the line that I'm very excited to have an interview with, Senator Melissa Franzen, an old friend of mine. She and I both ran for the first time back in 2012. Hello, Melissa.
Hi, Todd. Nice to talk with you, and certainly remember the first run. You never forget it, but happy to be at the Capitol representing our voice and our people.
Yes. You were in the inner, what they used to call the outer ring. Now you're in an inner ring. I'm still in an outer ring. You won, and we're still working on the district out where I live. But
absolutely.
You've been doing a great job in the Senate, representing basically the area of Edina, Minnetonka, Bloomington. Melissa.
And Eden Prairie.
So, Melissa, how's your schedule been lately? Busy?
Well, I just got off the Finance Committee literally a few minutes ago, less than 5 minutes ago, passing a couple of bills to the Senate floor, including state government finance omnibus bill and the education bill, K-12 bill. So that was literally wrapped up a few minutes ago here in the Senate. I'm in the legislature right now in St. Paul, so I'm full of paper and budget proposals and budget spreadsheets. So we're really busy, and obviously the work isn't done. So it's a little disappointing that we have to go into overtime.
Yeah. And I, again, thank you so much. I know how busy you are. I was kind of kidding when I asked, you know, what your schedule's been like. We all know. But the first week was pretty much stall tactics by the Republicans, at least in the House. And it seemed like they were stalling even through the regular session, like they really wanted to have the special session. How did you feel about that?
I would say I'm glad I'm not in the House, that I'm in the Senate, because the House has spent many hours, actually days, filibustering bills. The Republicans are challenging a lot of the bills that have been agreed upon by the governor. The majority is in both House and Senate. So it's unfortunate that they do not want to abide by the agreement. In the Senate, we're ready to work. In the minority, I'm assistant minority leader for the DFL, and we are abiding by those agreements. It's called compromise, and we are the only legislative body in the country that has divided government, and something's got to give to get through and make sure that people are back to work and we don't have a government shutdown. So we're down to the wire, and it should not be the case.
Right. And once you do make those compromises, you need to stick to them. You don't shouldn't be going back on them when the special session. I told a little story yesterday where my nephew was supposed to have his closing date yesterday on a new house, and he works for a Minnesota agency. And his lender called him on Monday and said, "We got to postpone your closing date because we got to find out if the state's going to close down or not." So even if the state does not close down, this has an impact on all Minnesotans.
Absolutely. That example is a very real example. We've heard of examples of constituents who are going to refinance, and they can't do that because now they have a layoff notice from the state. And even if we don't lay off, the state essentially prepares for a shutdown as we get closer to June 30th. And again, it shouldn't be the case. We have plenty of time to do our work. It's just unfortunate that a few people, legislators, think that they want to push it so close and it impacts people's lives every day. I'm getting emails of frustrations from constituents, and this is not a joke. This is real-life consequences for everyday people who are trying to move out of this pandemic, who are trying to make financial decisions for their families, and it has a cost. And this is unfortunate that we are playing with those lives right now.
Yes, we all agree. What about I was surprised yet not surprised by the voting restriction law proposals here in Minnesota by, again, by the Republicans. Are these proposals written outside of the state and they're passed around from state to state and the Republicans just share the same kind of voting restriction ideas?
Well, I'm glad you bring it up. I actually got a text from a constituent. Yes, people text me about this issue, and we were on opposite sides of the spectrum because there is this perception that there is this widespread fraud in our election system. And I can speak for Minnesota because that's who I represent, the state of Minnesota. And we don't have that problem. This is the whole issue of voter suppression that we're hearing happening in Georgia and other states. We don't have that problem. We should just focus on making sure that people who are eligible to vote have removed challenges to do so. And certainly the proposals that we surfaced in the Senate, at least earlier this session about voter ID, we've already debated that in a constitutional amendment in 2012 when I ran and you ran, and we mm-hmm. defeated that. So it's a done deal. If there were issues, we certainly should look at them. I have to say, in the Senate, proposed challenges to ballots and other voter suppression policies, they're not included in the bill that we just passed from the Finance Committee earlier today.
Right.
There is provisions about absentee ballot drop boxes, securing them, making sure that they're required to drop boxes to be securely fastened to a building under continuous surveillance and collected at least once per day during the absentee voting period. That's not a bad thing. That is making sure that people believe that the system is working and that it's secure and that your vote is going to count. We should all be looking forward to that. But obviously, it's political, just pandering. And I just think it's really irresponsible. It's dangerous. We should all make sure that our grandparents, people with disabilities, our seniors are able to get to the ballot box safely. And certainly under the pandemic, we made some changes, and we still had a very voting election system with integrity. So I'm thankful for our Secretary of State, Steve Simon, and I'm glad that we were not able to pass those proposals. But I agree, some of these do come from other states, these ideas.
Yeah, Steve Simon is great, and he and his family were considering moving to a hotel in January because they were receiving threats because of all of these lies about voting fraud and things like that. And, you know, I just felt so bad. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met, and he was, you know, having to consider such thing. He's got little children and everything. So it's really just getting way out of hand. I'm getting pretty happy about what I'm reading in the results in the education bill and even the transportation bill. Of course, there's compromises, so it's not great. It could be better in my view and probably in your view as well. One thing I'm disappointed in is that the reinsurance program got extended again. How do you feel about the reinsurance program?
Well, I've been very vocal about not being a fan, but I'm not opposed to it, especially I'm concerned about it being included now because the federal funds from the last rescue plan, from American Rescue Plan, we actually are getting more subsidies for the people in the individual market. Yes, you have to purchase your plan through Minsure, but you mm-hmm. can still get more subsidies and more people, and it expanded who is eligible depending on your household income and using the benchmark plan. I just think we could use, I think we put $83 million right now to reinsurance, where we can be using those $83 million for education. We could be doing those $83 million for preventive care. There's a lot, that's a lot of money to put back into the private sector insurance when we have another option. So I'm skeptical about it. I will be obviously concerned about it when we debate it on the floor. This is a last-minute change, or I would say transaction, in order to get essential worker back pay. Right. So members, people of the public need to know that this is how the majority in the Senate is operating, to transact between the private sector and essential workers who went above and beyond. Nurses, janitors, you name them. Paras went above and beyond during this pandemic, and they should be getting their funding for back pain for all the time that they had to use from their own vacation time. Not every employer was able to do the right thing to allow them to be at home when they were sick. They just lost their wages, and right. that is not right, and that is not un-Minnesotan. So yes. it's unfortunate that we had to trade reinsurance to make back pay available for these very important workers in our state.
Yeah, I won't make you say it, but I'll say that it seems like the Minnesota Republicans are, in this case, subsidizing the people who give money to their campaigns and taking money away from real Minnesotan working people. And am I understanding it right that we would have got federal money anyway? So this is basically we're paying for it instead of having federal dollars pay for that $80 or so million. Is that – am I thinking that correctly?
My understanding – yes, and we just heard it today, so I will have to go back to our nonpartisan fiscal staff to understand it better. But my understanding is it's through a revenue replacement, which is allowed under the federal funding that's coming into mm-hmm. our state. There's some stipulations that were still unclear, so that's why I can't say definitively, but I believe you're right mm-hmm. that it was money already allowable for this expense. So it's unfortunate that that we were trading something we were already getting, in my opinion. But I will definitely get a better answer in the next few hours, because hopefully we will be back in session, I think, this weekend. And by June 30th, we have to adjourn. Otherwise, there will be a shutdown. So I hope we don't get to that
right.
point.
Yeah, me too. I hope my nephew can buy his house this summer.
Me too.
Yeah, so I've been grilling you pretty hard here, and I know that your time is limited. So I'm just going to ask you what you're feeling good about at the end of the session and special session. Are there any highlights or parts of certain bills that you feel especially good about at the end?
Oh, well, I haven't had time to really assess everything we're doing. We're doing them such in piecemeal right now, but I'm glad that there's been some traction in transportation. I know it's not ideal. It's not a lights on bill, but it's not transformational. Neither is education. We could have done more. So I'm starting with what I don't like.
Yeah.
but in the end, we're funding government. We're making people, making sure they go back to work. And we have this unique and amazing opportunity to use all this federal transfer that's coming from the rescue plan, from COVID relief, to do really good work. And we could have done that in a bipartisan way, but it's been very, very politicized and very polarizing here in the Minnesota Senate and in the legislature in the last few years. And it's been to the deficit or the deficiency of really putting people first.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, but I'm glad that we were able to do some progress in higher education and environment and legacy and keeping our parks open for sure. So those are things that are bread and butter issues that we all care about. But right now, I think the issue of your nephew is really what's on my mind, that we do this quick enough to avoid any further self-inflicted wounds to our state and in our Minnesotans.
Yes, and I think the best way to solve the problem that you're pointing out here is to make sure that the Democrats take charge of the Senate next year. I think we are going to have a really great candidate out in our district. And this year, we're going to be able to door knock. So we're going to.
That's how we win.
That's right. So hopefully we'll be delivering another Senate member for you to work with next time. Thank you so much, Senator Melissa Franzen.
Two more Senate members.
Oh, sure.
Give us a good majority.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, okay, two. I'll try and reach out to other districts as well. we're trying to work hard out here in 33.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I appreciate that we're funding education with a 2% at least formula for the next 2 years. So 2.45 and 2% the outer year. So at least we got that. But we shouldn't be fighting about inflation, right? We should be fighting about where we should be putting those monies. Good use, including fully funding education.
To give you one last thing to make you feel good about, my wife works, she's on the school board, and the school superintendent at my daughter's school called her and said, well, she already knew this, but they were planning for a 1.5 budget, 1.5 increase in the state, and he's elated that it's 2.5, and it's even 2% the following year. So A lot of school superintendents are very, very happy about it. So good work on that.
But just to translate, for everyday people, that's $161 per pupil On the first 2022, and then in 2023, it's about 135 per pupil. So a total of $462.947 million just for that piece.
Yes, and we need even more of that, but that's a good hit. I mean, we haven't done that much for 15 or so years, so really good step forward.
We'll get there.
All right. Well,
thank you, Todd. I appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you again, Melissa. Thanks so much for calling in, and go have some fun with your colleagues.
Hopefully we'll be having fun July 1st when we have done our job.
There you go. Celebration and a nice vacation for you. So
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That was Senator Melissa Franzen taking some time out of her incredibly busy schedule right now during the special session to call in live. That was not pre-recorded. That was live. So we're getting up-to-the-minute updates here today. We're going to do another interview later on in the show from the House side. But right now, let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil today. He's on vacation until next Thursday. He'll be back on the 1st next Thursday. I'll be sitting in also on Monday and Wednesday as well as today. So that was Senator Melissa Franzen. She was the first Democrat to get elected to the Senate in her area in at least decades. I'm thinking at least 30 years. It's really difficult to look back on that kind of history in Minnesota office holders, especially when district lines change and things like that. But for at least about 30 years, I know that there was a Republican in that seat up until she won in 2012. And she and I were new candidates together. I was running for the House in the ring just a little further out. That is still a red ring, but she turned her ring blue back then. And to review some of the little bit of detail about what she and I were talking about, the money for the education funding really is incredible. It's the biggest increase in funding in 15 years. And like I said, my wife's on the school board. She reported to me last night that the school superintendent, who's an incredible guy, does really hard work. Worked with him a lot when I was running and found out a lot of ins and outs of how budgeting works for schools in Minnesota. They were planning on the increase to be 1.5%, and it was actually 2.5%. So that's a really incredible thing. They've got some money to work with to improve things, and there is improvement needed. We don't have a marching band in my daughter's school. They just have what they call the pep band, and they wear the same color T-shirts, and there's not enough of them, and they don't have a good place to sit at the football games and things like that. When I was in school, Minnesota was funding their schools really quite well, and marching band was one of my favorite things. I wasn't a very good student. I think we talked about that yesterday. But I was a drummer in the marching band. That was my favorite thing in school. And kids now rarely have an opportunity to do that. So anyway, so the funding is increased 2.5 for the first year, 2% then for the following year for pupils. And then there's also money going toward hiring and recruiting teachers of color and indigenous teachers and increasing suicide prevention training and grants. This is another thing that we've been talking about for years here. The Democrats have been trying to get improvements in mental health issues at schools. There's just been a huge disparity, and even with the disparity in certain places having it better than others, there's not enough in any schools. So we have a lot of catching up to do, and this is a really, really good step forward. So and it looks like it's going to go all the way through. So we heard from Melissa Franzen that she's still working. She said she's got a bunch of papers in her hand as she was talking to us, and she's running back to talk more. They're probably going to be working through the weekend. They've got until next Wednesday to get all the budget bills passed. The ones that are really going to be difficult are going to be the public safety bills. Those include police issues, and there's going to be a lot of contention going on still about that. So that's something that we're all keeping our fingers crossed on. Another point that my wife made last night, talking about education funding, it's very frustrating, this messing around with time, wasting time, making sure we have a special session every other year, every budgeting year. So that's it. This session is a budgeting year. Next session next year will be for other things, like hopefully we'll pass paid family and medical leave and things like that that poll extremely well to all Minnesotans. But this year, they don't work on things like that. They just work on getting the budgets. And there's, you know, many different categories to get a budget set. And every time there's a budget year, the Republicans just filibuster. They waste time. When they're in charge of the House, they write bills and don't let anyone see them until 24 hours before end of session. Just they've, you know, been doing things like this for at least 10 years now. And in 2011, 10 years ago, they did shut down the Minnesota state government. And it was shut down for, if I remember correctly, for 3 or 4 weeks. And so when this happens, the schools don't know what kind of an increase they're going to get. And, of course, for planning for next year, so now it's going to be July 1st. That leaves them only, a little more than 7 weeks to plan how they're going to use the money in the following year. It would be better if they had an extra month or 6 weeks if the budget would have been passed at the end of the regular session. But our school superintendent was at least glad that he's getting the word now, because if the state shuts down, then the schools have no idea what they're going to do with their own budgets. So it's a very widespread. The pain is very widespread to absolutely everybody in Minnesota when the Republicans shut down the state. And if the state shuts down this time, it will be the Republicans shutting down the state. And that's precisely why they're probably not going to shut down the state, because when they did shut it down in 2011, what happened in the election of 2012 was the DFL swept up the House and Senate overwhelmingly. That's when Melissa Franzen first won. Now she's been reelected 3 times, I believe. But the Republicans, I think, remember that. I think some of them remember that. So I'm thinking the state is not actually going to shut down because they know what the ramification is going to be. And I think that they also know that most of Minnesotans will be blaming them. And we'll talk more about that when we come back from a short break. You are listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, and Patrick is here running the board, doing the music. So let her rip, Patrick. We'll be back in a couple minutes. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and home of really cool, it sounds like bass guitar pedal on that last song. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Patrick is producing today at the board. Also, the news is moving really fast in the legislature. I was reading before I came here, and it was looking like there were some disappointments going on in things like child care programs and raising pay for personal care attendants. And now, as of just maybe an hour ago, it looks like those all of a sudden now have passed. So that's – you could hear in the interview with Melissa Franzen, Senator Franzen, that things are moving right now very unpredictably and very quickly. So another thing, if the state shuts down, And even without the state shutting down, just not knowing what the budget's going to be for the transportation bill, things like rest areas, road projects, transit operations, they get interrupted. So any road work being done around your house, it would have stopped, or it will stop if the state shuts down. Like I said, it's looking more and more like the state's not going to shut down. But, you know, this playing around with it the way the Republicans do every other year, every budget year, is threatening just everything, obviously. I mean, road projects shutting down, rest areas. If you're taking a long trip and you're coming up to a rest area and you really need to use it, it's closed. And that's okay because the state park that you were on your way to is closed anyway. But some good news that just is coming in, basically. Two giant areas of the state budget were also on the cusp of guaranteed funding because, like I just mentioned, the transportation bill was put forward, and it's on its way to Governor Tim Walz for signing. Things are put forward to still be voted on this weekend. Lawmakers advanced the $21 billion education spending plan that we were talking about in more in depth for preschool through high school toward votes this weekend, and also a massive health and human services bill that will boost spending on child care programs and raise the pay for personal care attendants is poised for action this weekend. Public safety budget bill that funds law enforcement agencies and prisons continues to cause difficulty, like I mentioned. So I really have no idea what's going to happen with those. You know, again, the Republicans promised to talk about police reform, and they never did. Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka promised we were going to have hearings. We're going to really figure this out. You know, after that week with the extra murder and the Chauvin case and everything, he promised us. But like as per usual, he broke those promises. Now, I told you I was going to talk a little bit about the strategy that the Republicans use. For one thing, the Clean Car Initiative, that it was really a weird thing they were doing with that. In the environmental committee, the joint session committee, it's called the conference committee, but it's basically also known as joint committee hearings, when at the end of the session the Senate and the House get together to take their, in this case it would be the environmental bill, and just work out the details that are slightly different and come to an agreement so that two bills can be made into one bill that can be sent to the governor to be signed into law. So they were working on the budget, the environmental budget, which includes a lot of stuff, including the a separate funding for the parks and all of this stuff. And the Republicans said, we're not going to do anything in this committee even unless the Clean Car Initiative is stopped. And the Clean Car Initiative was ordered by the governor, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. He told the MPCA, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, to start to get organized to implement it's more than just a clean car initiative. It's basically an emissions initiative. But it would include clean cars, very similar to the California Clean Car Initiative, where a certain amount of cars sold by dealers need to be electric cars. And it wasn't even supposed to be implemented until 2025. And the Republicans said it either needs to be – first they said it needs to be completely gone. And then they said it needs to be delayed another 2 years, which would put it out to 2027. By that time, everybody's going to be driving an electric car, it seems like, right now. And so it was kind of insane because the Democrats in the committee had no power over that. Nobody really had – I mean, it was already going. And so it was a crazy demand, and then they started not even showing up for the committee hearings. So the Democrats were just like having to twiddle their thumbs. What are we supposed to do? We don't have a quorum. They won't show up. We can't pass the environmental budget. So, of course, it became part of the special session, and they still kept holding out on it. And what's his name? Ingebrigtsen, the Senate half – the chairmanship on the Senate side, which of course is the Republican side of that committee, he went fishing in Alaska, basically thumbing his nose to every single person who lives in Minnesota. Yeah, I'm not going to do my work. I'm just going to go fishing in Alaska. And, you know, screw your environmental bill. And basically, screw you if you live in Minnesota. Screw you is what Senator Engelbrechtson had to say. But then all of a sudden, I think it was last Friday or Thursday, it just disappeared. Their demand disappeared. They said, oh, no, we're not going to do that anymore. And then the bill went through. I think they got it passed over the weekend, as a matter of fact. And that's really the main victory that is seen in it by the Democrats is that, well, the Republicans at least aren't holding the bill hostage anymore, which to me means basically holding every person in Minnesota hostage, which the Republicans have been liking to do for over 10 years now. So that's the Clean Car Initiative move, and I believe what they're going to do is they're going to use it. First of all, I think that they thought that the Democrats would fold on it. I don't know how they thought it was going to work, but I think they thought somehow the governor was going to say, okay, I'm folding on it. I'll take that away. Okay? Take the gun away from my head. I'm getting rid of the car initiative. But the governor did not do that. And the Democrats held their ground, which the Republicans did not expect. So finally, the Republicans just thought, okay, we got to let this go. Otherwise, you know, it's just us being the blatant bad guys, and this news has already gotten bad enough. And I think the messaging and the news has been covered places like Minnesota Reformer and even NPR News and us here at AM 950. I think we were exposing it enough that the Republicans got a little nervous. Like, hey, you know, we used to be able to do all of this stuff and nobody really paid close attention. So we could just blame it on the Democrats after the state shut down. But now, wow, Minnesotans seem to actually be watching us more. And they're able to tell that we're absolutely diabolical fiends here. You know, we're basically the Simon Bar Sinister villain in this story. And now Minnesotans understand that. So we just got to let go. We got to let go of that demand. But of course, then they'll send out to their own base people, their own base voters, which is dwindling more and more all the time. Which is why they have to come up with all these tactics to try and figure out how to win elections, because they know that their people in Minnesota, people in the country, are mostly progressive. And conservatism has always been on the outs, basically. You know, Civil War period of time, and we had to – I mean, basically throughout history, human history, I would say. But we're not going to go down – we're not going to get that far in the weeds. I think that what they're going to use this car initiative for is when they're fundraising and trying to get their people excited about the election next year. But of course, it's going to be a year from now, so it's not going to work very well. But they're going to use it to say the Democrats were trying to stuff that. They stuffed it down your throat. We tried to stop them, but they stuffed it down your throat. We tried to slap the spoon out of their hand because we're working for you, but they overpowered us and stuck the spoon down your throat, and now we have electric cars now we have thriving car sales businesses because they're able to sell enough electric cars. You know, we tried to prevent that thriving thing, but we couldn't. So I believe that's what they're going to use that for. I don't think it's going to work very well. The whole reason that we keep having a special session every budget year, which is every other year, I'll just quickly explain how it works for those who may not realize, because it is a little complicated. There's an election. So there was the election in 2020. So we have a brand new House, and every 4 years we have a brand new Senate. And that election happens every 2 years. So this year we have a new House, we have a new Senate, and the first year they put together the budget for the next 2 years, for this year and the next year. So the session is usually pretty long. It starts right away in January, like January 5th or something like that, and it goes until the end of May. And it takes up a lot of hours every day. There's a lot of work that has to be done. And we used to get it done pretty easily in the state of Minnesota. But then the Republicans started to pull things like if they were in the majority, they wouldn't let the Democrats see what they were working on. They would work on a bill, basically kind of not let the Democrats really in, they would tweak it at the last minute and then put it out, and there's, you know, a 200-page bill, and they release it maybe 12 hours. I think one time it was 6 hours before the end of session, and then they expect a final vote on it. So, of course, nobody can read it. So they're trying to sneak stuff into it and get it passed. And that's why often then the Democrats are like, well, we can't vote on this. We don't even know what's in it. And it goes to the last minute, and then they say, oh, we didn't get our work done, so now we got to call a special, you know, the governor a few weeks later calls a special session because we have to pass a budget or the state shuts down. That's how the Minnesota Constitution works. If we don't get budget agreements and a budget set by a certain time, this year at least, it's July 1st, if the budget's not set, the state shuts down because nobody has allocated any money for anything. So the state shuts down. Everyone who works for the state gets laid off. This has happened. Both my brother and my nephew work for the state of Minnesota. My nephew's wife, or my brother's wife, also works for the state of Minnesota. My nephew has yet to get laid off because he's only been working there 2 years. But my brother's been laid off, I want to say, 3 times in the last 10 years. Usually for a very short period of time, but in 2011 it was for weeks. And so the other thing that you got to keep in mind here is that the legislature in a 2-year period of time, because the House at least is that particular House for a 2-year period of time, and there is a limit as to how many hours basically they can meet. I don't know if it's how many weeks or how many hours. It must be weeks because they stuff a lot of extra hours in during the special session. So it must be weeks, period of time. So that's why the budget year is really long. It goes from the beginning of January to the end of May. And then the next year where they're working on other things like maybe specialty things like fixing a certain bridge or getting money for a town for a refurbishment of some sort or paid family or medical leave, you know, things like that. Those things are passed in the other year. And that year is usually shorter because it has to be. The last year it started in May because we always have a special session. So the special session takes up 2 or 3 extra weeks, so the next session the following year has to be cut 2 or 3 weeks. And the Republicans do that because they want the smallest amount of time to try and pass things like paid family and medical leave because they hate Minnesotans having a better life. They hate giving Minnesotans the things that Minnesotans really want, because that takes money away from the people who give them money for their campaigns. So they're looking out for, like I said when Melissa was still on the phone, I didn't make her say it, but I said it. They're looking out, like in the reinsurance program, they're looking out for the insurance companies. They're taking money away from the Minnesotan people, and they're making sure the insurance companies still get the money. Whenever they have a choice to do that, that's what they do. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce has been working against paid family and medical leave. I personally have been working very hard on it. Even when I was still a candidate, I worked with small business groups, 3 different small business groups throughout the years to try and get paid family and medical leave passed because it would help small businesses. It would help my small business and every small business owner that I've ever met. It would help them. And I've met quite a few because I've worked with these groups. And, of course, all Minnesotans think it's a great idea. But the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, who represents a very small portion of business owners in Minnesota, small business owners take up 99%. They own 99% of the businesses in Minnesota. So the chamber basically works for the large corporations, and they work against it. And that's who the Republicans are working for. And that's why they want the least amount of time in the off year where we're trying to get things like paid family and medical leave passed. That's what they're doing. That's why we're in a special session now. That's why they didn't show up to do their jobs in their committees during the regular session. They even did that at the beginning of the special session. I think for the first week of the special session, they were thinking, hey, maybe let's close down the state and try and blame it on the Democrats. And then they could see throughout that week that, oh, no, people are paying attention now. We can't blame it on the Democrats. Oh, maybe we should slow down. Maybe we need to start passing these bills, because that's what's happening now. So that's what I believe their strategy is. If you've got a different idea, give us a call at 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. We're going to take a short break and be right back here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, Patrick on the board. Kind of wrapping up this hour. We've been talking about Minnesota stuff the whole hour. I like that. I think that's more important than the national stuff. The national stuff gets covered on a lot of other shows. One more thing, a quote from Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. She said that lawmakers are cutting it too close for comfort with an end-of-the-month deadline approaching. A new two-year budget must be in place by July 1st to avoid the possible cutoff in services. What she says, I quote, "This is an unacceptable place for us to be. We are too close, and the end is not exactly in sight yet." There are some really contentious stuff things coming up with having to do mostly with law enforcement funding. And I have no idea if they're going to be able to wrap that up by Wednesday night. They'll be there till midnight Wednesday night, and they'll be there all weekend. But here's some happy Minnesota news. Some COVID test sites are closing this week. They were pop-up sites in, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Bloomington, and some other places. The closures take away some convenient options in the Twin Cities, but they were becoming redundant, basically. They weren't being utilized very much because there are fewer and fewer people getting tests. And most of the people who are, because of the high vaccination rates now, Minnesota's still not quite up to that 70%, but we're doing pretty good, especially in these areas, you know, Bloomington, St. Paul, Minneapolis. Most of the people who are getting tests are sick. Maybe they have a cold or something and they're worried. So that would also, you would think, result in the – now, this is kind of complicated. So we talk about the percentage of cases to how many tests. Now, when the pandemic was raging, we were doing, you know, tens of thousands of tests or something like that. 100,000 tests a day or something. And so we would have a certain amount of cases. Now we have so few tests going on. I think I have some more than 10 million COVID tests have been performed in Minnesota. The usage rate has declined from 433 tests per 10,000 residents at the peak of the spring to 152 on June 14th. So it's basically cut to one-fourth of what it was. So you would think, well, if only one-fourth of the people are being tested and most of those people who are getting the test think that they're sick, you would think that percentage would go up. But it's not. It's still way down from 7.5 to 1.3. That's really great news. So the music's here. We got to take a break. We'll be back at the top of the hour. Or 5 minutes in, AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. This is the Matt McNeil Show, and I am not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt. He's on vacation until next Thursday, and Patrick is on the board. This just a few minutes ago, Governor Tim Walz made some statements, and he said that he is confident a special session will end by June 30th, by the deadline, which means the state will not shut down. He's confident of that. But he admits police reform in public safety bill is stuck, and no agreement yet on that. He says it will likely be the last thing while the world is watching after George Floyd murder. So as we predicted, a lot of the other bills are getting kind of swept up and finalized. There's another really good thing that's going on. Here's something that I didn't really realize was going on. There is a thing called treatment courts for veterans. And so basically what they are is they're right now they're for veterans primarily, but veterans who are having trouble with therapy, and it helps them with therapy and other services instead of locking them up. The bill would expand the program statewide. Right now it's only in some counties. So that's a really great thing, because there are a lot of veterans who have drug problems or just other mental illness problems, depression and things like that. A lot of them are homeless. And instead of, you know, if they're homeless and they're caught with drugs or something, instead of locking them up, these treatment courts try and get them into some sort of program that will help them. That's something that needs to happen more widespread in the whole country. Talked about that yesterday and how so much resources for facilities that take care of people who have needs in mental illness and other things, that they've been so decimated over the last decades that people are just – they're home. That's why we have such a homeless problem. We had virtually no homeless problem in the 1970s basically. But now it's just many, many, many times worse than it was then. It was a problem that people didn't really talk about back then. But now it's a really rampant problem in the whole country, and we need more facilities to help people like that instead of putting them in jails. That doesn't help them. It doesn't help anybody. All it does is fill up our prisons, and then the prisons are overwhelmed, and they can't take care of them. I mean, these poor people are just getting, they're getting pummeled. Some national news. We spent the whole last hour on Minnesota, but of course you're hearing there's been some pretty important national news today. Oh, one thing is Rudy Giuliani got his license taken away by the New York bar, so he cannot practice law in New York. I don't know that he was practicing law in New York, but it's still really a good gesture to take away his license to do so. And the reason they took it away is basically because of him just lying to the American people. It has to do with fraud is what it has to do with. When in another interesting news in Missouri, the Republican-led Senate in Missouri did a study on the apparently an in-depth study of the 2020 election. And they determined that there was nothing wrong with the election. Everything was fine. It went without a hitch. They found not only no widespread fraud, they found no fraud whatsoever. And they said that the people who were trying to say that there was fraud and are going on TV and spreading the word, they went so far as to say that these people should be investigated for possible criminal prosecution for fraud, because they're spreading fraudulent information to people, and it's damaging. That's why fraud – Trump is probably going to end up going to prison for fraud. He's the kind of guy – he's a mobster. So the mobsters, what they do is they commit a million crimes, and then you don't even know which one to try and get them on, you know. Okay, he's committed 20 murders. Which one are you going to go after? Which one are you going to work on? You can't just say, you have to prove without a shadow of a doubt that he's committed one murder. He's committed 20 murders. You're probably only going to get him for one. And as a matter of fact, it's the Al Capone thing. You're probably not going to get him for murder. You're probably going to get him for tax evasion. That's what happened with Al Capone. With Trump, he's probably going to go to prison for fraud. When it's fraud, you go to prison. There's no more questions asked. Fraud means prison. So in Missouri, that's what the Republican-led Senate said at the end of their report that they gave after their study of the 2020 election. The people who are trying to say this was a fraudulent election should we recommend that they should be investigated for possible conviction of fraud. And then the same Senate said, yeah, but we should pass all these voter suppression laws because we don't want a fraudulent election to ever happen again. So to me, that's proof that Republicans really understand that there's no way they can win elections anymore unless they're doing something really drastic. And they have been doing things really drastic for decades. And now this is where they're at. This is the drastic thing they're doing now, is all of these, trying to pass all these laws where even laws that say you can't prove that there was fraud, well, we just don't like the winner, so we're just going to change the winner. That's what they are passing. They're passing laws to do that. It's crazy. Anyway, but national news that's happening right now, I've heard pundits talking about what's going on with Biden and the infrastructure bill and compromising with Republicans. And, of course, just a couple hours ago, the news came out that there is an agreement. And he's making a big deal out of it. You know, we have a deal is basically what he's saying. And I would like to point out that there are some good things in this deal. But the point he's making, and this is very important, politically speaking, I think a lot of these pundits are just not – they're not thinking about the political game that's going on here. Well, first I'll tell you what some of the good things in it are. It's way too small, of course, $1.2 trillion over 8 years, $600 billion in new spending. There should be more of that as well, in my opinion, and most Americans' opinions, apparently. Anyway, in the agreed-upon framework, the new spending includes money for roads and bridges, $66 billion for rail. That's a good deal. $49 billion for public transit. That's pretty good. It could be better, but pretty good. There still is $55 billion for water infrastructure and $65 billion for broadband. So things like broadband and water infrastructure, the Republicans were fighting against that. They were also fighting against public transit and rail. So the fact that those things are in this bill still pretty robust is, I think, a really good thing. The White House claims it includes the largest federal investment in public transit in U.S. history, the largest federal investment in passenger rail since Amtrak began, and the largest single investment in bridges since the interstate highway system was built. The White House says the plan will eliminate lead water pipes and upgrade the power grid while also creating millions of American jobs. And then this is also a surprise. It also includes some elements focused on the climate prioritized by Biden. It includes $15 billion for building a network of electric vehicle chargers and electrifying school and transit buses, plus money for upgrading infrastructure for the impact of climate change. Those were all things that the Republicans were fighting against. But now they're in this. But of course, they're not funding it enough. And we don't want to have it turn into Obamacare, where it gets so watered down that it's really not doing its job. We need it to do its job so that everyone is like, wow, this is great. My life is better. Like what happened when FDR made all the changes that got us out of the Depression. That's how America needs to feel by 2024. And funny thing, you would think that everybody would agree that that's a good thing for America, to have everybody feel great about their lives, because the government is doing things that is helping them to be able to thrive in their own lives. You would think everybody would agree on that. So this bill is too small. It won't go far enough. And that's what I hear all the pundits complaining about. And they're saying that Biden is folding. He's collapsing under the weight of Sinema and Manchin and Now, it's true that the Republicans still might not vote for this bill, even though they're saying they will. And it's also true that there might be some Democrats who refuse to vote for this because it's too small. But the other part of the political game, and Biden is not hiding this at all. I'm quoting Biden. Today is a huge day for one half of my economic agenda. That's what he said in his remarks today. Democrats plan to use the Senate reconciliation process to advance measures like universal preschool and 2 years of community college. Quote, I'm getting to work with Congress right away on the other half of my agenda as well. Noting that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senator Leader Chuck Schumer were committed to making sure the infrastructure package and the reconciliation process move in tandem. So I find this highly interesting. They're trying to basically do their whole package, but they're doing it in two halves. The half that they know the Republicans won't vote for, they're just going to push through in reconciliation. And then this half that they've seeming to be a bipartisan bill so that they can say, yeah, we have a bipartisan bill. And we also have this other, you know, but we also got the job done completely. You know, like I said, I always think Obama calls Joe Biden every night and just goes, Joe, don't do it. Don't compromise. Remember what happened. Don't do what we did. They're scoundrels. Because, you know, he never swears or anything. They're dirty scoundrels. Don't work with them. Anyway, let's take a short break. We'll come back and maybe I'll find a little bit of what Nancy Pelosi had to say about this and also another thing that she did today. When we come back at AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil, and Patrick's on the board. How you been, Patrick? Oh, he doesn't have his headphones on. He doesn't even hear me right now.
Oh, I can hear you just fine. Oh, it's okay. When I turn the mic on, then I can't hear you anymore.
Ah, okay.
Well, things are going pretty well. How are you doing?
Good. We had a party at our house. A lot of people came. Have you been getting out and seeing people?
I've started to. I was in Duluth. My friends bought a new house a couple weeks ago. That was kind of my first big post-vax event. I hadn't seen that person in over 2 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty wild to not see people for so long. And then when you do see them, it seems like you saw them last week, you know. That's at least the experience I'm feeling. Here is some news. Representative Heather Edelson, I'm seeing that she's tweeting within the last hour, the Minnesota House just passed the housing budget bill. The bill is now headed to the governor's desk to be signed into law. She says, our bipartisan housing budget agreement invests in affordable housing and establishes an orderly off-ramp to Minnesota's COVID-19 eviction moratorium, resulting in more stability for both renters and landlords. That sounds like good news to me. Trying to just kind of keep my thumb on what's going on in Minnesota politics. It's moving very quickly here for the final days of the special session, keeping our fingers crossed that the state does not shut down. But I left you saying that I was going to talk about what Nancy Pelosi had to say about the infrastructure deal that's being made. Basically, she's making the point, this bipartisan plan that Joe Biden's talking about today, it does not address investments in child care, tax credits for families, or other programs that Democrats say are necessary to ensure all people are able to participate in the economy. Joe Biden himself said, this does not really cover my family's parts of my plan. So Pelosi insists that the two infrastructure packages be linked. She told reporters today that the House will not move forward on any bipartisan agreement until the Senate passes a separate bill to address those other priorities. I quote her, we aren't going down the path unless we all go down the path together. Pelosi said she supports the concept of a bipartisan bill on the elements of infrastructure that have widespread support. But she also called on Senate Democrats to use special budget rules known as reconciliation to pass the partisan elements of Biden's bill without the threat of a filibuster in the Senate. She says there won't be an infrastructure bill unless we have a reconciliation bill, plain and simple. If there is no bipartisan bill, then we'll just go when the Senate passes a reconciliation bill. But I'm hopeful that we will have a bipartisan bill. So they're playing hardball. It's a little bit of a good cop, bad cop thing that I see them doing here. And I personally think it's a really smart political plan. One thing that I did learn when I ran for office and met so many people who are running for office and so many people who are in office at many different levels, this whole notion that basically Ronald Reagan began and the Republicans began 40 years ago, that the government is a bad thing and politicians are bad. And now you hear on both sides, this is why I'm hearing pundits right now criticizing Biden on this and other measures. They're sounding like they know. And the politicians, they don't know anything. Politicians are stupid. They should listen to me. What I learned is politicians are not stupid. They're some of the best people I've met in my life. They're serving you. They're putting their lives aside to serve you. They're public servants. I set my whole life aside when I ran for office. Melissa Franzen that I interviewed last hour, I know some of these people personally. It absorbs her whole life. I was going to talk about this, but it looks like we don't have enough time today. We'll talk about it on Monday. That's why you see so few small business owners like myself, actual small business owners in office. Everyone says, why are politicians always lawyers or it's because their whole life is taken up by that job. I can't maintain my small business and be a politician. I was trying to set it up so I could, and I think at that time I had a way of doing it. But the way it is now, I would have to make completely different changes. So these people are good people. They're smart people. They know what they're doing. You think Joe Biden knows less than you about how to do this? About how to handle things in the Senate? Just because you're a progressive Democrat, you think he's stupid because of what he's doing right now? I know he knows there's a good chance that this won't pass. This bipartisan bill won't pass. Of course, Republicans will go back on their word. That's kind of a prerequisite to being a Republican these days, is making sure you lie a certain number of times each week. So there's a huge chance that the Republicans who are now saying, oh, yeah, thanks for the bipartisan bill, and then they'll vote no. And there's also a chance that some Democrats won't vote for it because they're trying to make their own stand for their own constituents. They're playing their own political game. And Biden knows that. He was one of them for decades. He knows this might not pass, and then when it doesn't pass, I see him likely to say, okay, the Republicans told me that they were happy about this bipartisan effort. Well, and then they vote no. Screw them. Reconciliation on the whole thing. That's what I think he's going to do. Because he knows this is make or break, actually, for our democracy. This stuff has to work. And America has to heal and get better and thrive by 2024, because we can't afford to have another Republican president. This will no longer be a democracy. And all the other countries that we're all going to want to be going to, I'm going to want to move to Canada or something, they're not going to allow that. So we're going to be stuck here in an authoritarian, I don't know, fascism or something. That's what the Republicans have made clear. They don't want democracy anymore. It does not work for them. So another huge announcement that Speaker Nancy Pelosi made nearly a month after Senate Republicans blocked the move for a commission to probe the January 6th attack. I wonder why. Now they're saying that the FBI, it's an FBI plot. Well, wouldn't you think that they would want to be part of a commission to figure out if that's really true? No, they know the FBI didn't plan it. They're scared because they know that they're in deep trouble. Nancy Pelosi, this morning, she says, this morning with great solemnity and sadness, I am announcing that the House will be establishing a select committee on the January 6th insurrection. January 6th was one of the darkest days in our nation's history. It is imperative that we establish the truth of that day and ensure that an attack of that kind cannot happen and that we root out the causes of it all. Now, this is another thing that I'm hearing some people complaining, oh, well, it's going to be like Benghazi. It's just going to be one-sided. It's just going to be Democrats. And then the Republicans are going to say, oh, it's just a partisan witch hunt. Yeah, of course they're going to say that because they always say that. But we need to do it anyway. Why would we not do it? We got to stop not doing things because we're anticipating how the Republicans are going to react to it. We've been doing that for 40 years. How's it been working? We ended up with Trump as president. So please, let's work together, Democrats. Nancy Pelosi knows what she's doing. She's the most effective speaker of the House, man or woman, in the history of the United States. She's gotten more done than any speaker of the House in the history of the United States. She knows how to get things done. She knows how to make people do things she wants them to do. She's the best at this job that anybody has ever been. Let's not call her stupid. She knows what she's doing. This is what needs to happen. It feels like none of it's happening fast enough, but it's actually happening very quickly. This is a highly complex situation, and we're moving through it very quickly. We had more than 4,000 people dying every day of COVID on January 20th. And now, after 5 months of the Biden administration, we have less than 300 in the whole country every day dying of COVID. In 5 months, that's the difference that comes. I mean, you think that's slow? I don't know. I think that's super uber fast. Let's take a break. We are going to have Representative Kali Herr. She's the House Majority Whip in the Minnesota State House of Representatives. She's going to give us a call at 5:40 in about 10 minutes, and we're going to speak with her and get some perspectives from her. I don't know if there's a call coming in right now. But, Patrick, can we take a break? He's taking a – well, we'll take a break here in a second. Anyway, Representative Kali Herr, yeah, we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back, and very shortly we're going to have the interview with the House Majority Whip in the Minnesota State House. Boy, you never had much game, so I needed to upgrade, so I went and walked away. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil, and we have on the phone the House Majority Whip in the Minnesota State House, Representative Kali Herr. Hello, Representative.
Hello, how are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for giving us your time. I know it's crazy busy down there.
It is.
Yeah. Well, first question, things are changing by the minute. Seems like from your current point of view, do you think that there's going to be a state government shutdown?
Well, I'm hopeful that we won't have one. I mean, we passed 6 budget bills already where we have agreement with our Senate partners, and we have a number of agreements on the table. And so we just really have the public safety bill that we're still trying to work through. So I am very hopeful that we will be able to wrap this up before June 30th.
Good, good. I don't know. Do you have an opinion of what the strategy is for some of your colleagues to They're throughout all of last week, it seems like they were just filibustering time. And one guy was talking about how much of a geek he is and that he goes to Comic-Con every year and he's talking about movies and, they're talking about crazy stuff. Obviously not related to any of the bills or anything. I know that they want to waste time, but what do you think their strategy is?
You know, that's always such a challenge to think about what is inside, our Republican colleagues' minds when they're on the floor with us. But, you know, the truth is that they have been obstructionists, and they are upset about not having been included in the conference committee, which is generally how it works, is that the majorities of both chambers work together, and we have been working very closely with our Republican Senate colleagues. Mm-hmm. And I think that when, their strategy is to just make it as difficult as possible for us to get things done for Minnesotans and to push it as far as they possibly can. There were a couple of issues that they felt like were really important to them that had not been included. But again, the bills that did come forward in agreement was with an agreement with the GOP Senate. And so, you know, the only thing I can think of is that they want to be as difficult as possible, because that was the only leverage that they have, through this process. And so, that's kind of where we ended up, and we heard everything from the Civil War to, mm-hmm. Comic-Con to everything else that they could have thrown at us to waste hours and hours, days upon days.
Yeah, and I heard talk of the Civil War, and basically he was demonstrating that he actually doesn't know a lot about the Civil War. that's how it sounded to me. But were you actually on the House floor on Monday when Kurt Dowd threw his little tantrum against
Liz Olson? Yes, and I happened to be away for just a short time, but I listened. I was actually on the phone the entire time when I heard that exchange, and I was completely appalled by it. I just thought, we don't accept that kind of behavior from anybody in society. If children behave that way in school, they would be sent home. If you behave mm-hmm. that way at your job, you would be fired. And yet, this is the behavior of our Republican colleagues in the House, and it's just completely unacceptable.
Yeah, I thought Representative Liz Olson handled that correctly. I said yesterday that I would have thrown my shoe at his ear if I was her, but she held her ground, and she did it very calmly. I was very proud of her in that moment.
Absolutely, her leadership was absolutely needed in what we were experiencing that day.
Yes, absolutely. What do you have special parts of bills that you feel you're happy about that have gotten in, or conversely disappointed that the way it went, or do you think? Go ahead.
Yeah, and I would say that I think just to remind our listeners that we are the only split legislature in the country. So in order for us to pass any of these bills, we had to compromise. And yes, there are a lot of things that we gave up on. Like, for example, we put through a lot of tenant protection bills in our housing bill, but none of those made it. And I carried a number of those bills. But, I'm also really hopeful, because there were a lot of really great things that we did get included in these bills. Like, we got the biggest increase in education funding in 15 years, funding for affordable housing and homelessness prevention. Homelessness prevention was huge for us. And so that's something that we should be very, very proud of. And then tax cut for workers and small businesses affected by the pandemic. And, within almost all of our bills, we looked at the work through an equity lens. And that's something that is really critical that hasn't been always done in the past, and that we know we have some of the largest disparities when it comes to education, healthcare, economics, the environment, and that we would, that even if some of those provisions didn't make it into some of these bills, that we continually looked at the bills from that lens to ensure that equity was always a part of our work. And so, those are things that we can be really proud of as Minnesotans, and really fighting for our progressive agenda.
Yeah, I think you have a lot to be proud of in this session. Leading up to it, the Republicans were just taking such a hard stand on what they wanted and didn't want. And the way that the bills are turning out, I've been following as close as I can, and I'm feeling pretty good about them. I'm feeling like, wow, I think we got most of what we wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I would agree with you. And I'm a little bit disappointed in some of the things that, like, I think a lot of times what we're hearing from people is, the state of Minnesota is coming into all of this money. And what I have to remind people is that that is one-time money. And I agree with you that for the most part, we got a lot of really great things in these bills. But I am really disappointed that, like increasing revenues on our highest earners, which is the bill that I carried this year, that, that didn't make it in the final tax bill. And I feel like we're losing the point that, one-time money is really great to get us out of where we are right now coming out of this pandemic, but we need to build the infrastructure to have long-term success and ensure that all Minnesotans are doing well, and that requires us to raise taxes, and that requires for us to use those taxes to to build the infrastructure for future change. And that's the one thing that I think I might be the most disappointed in, but you are absolutely right. Mm-hmm. We have a lot to be proud of. We got things in this bill that, you know, when we looked at earlier before the session, the regular session let out, that it didn't feel like we were going to have a chance to get any of those items in. And the
right.
fact that we got, you know, some of the programs around homelessness and some of the increased fundings and, you know, just things around, like, even like having foster ed children, people within the foster care system, being able to go to college for free. Like, those things were not in the bills to begin with. And yet now we are taking care of some of our most vulnerable and most marginalized communities in ways that we have not in the past.
Yeah, that's really great. We need to tout it as much as possible. And also, I agree with you on the tax. I know the fourth tier tax was started about 8 years ago now, and it really made a huge, huge difference. And of course, the mm-hmm. Republicans stopped talking about it because they know that it's a good thing that we really need. But the way I feel about it is, well, you know, that we can use this one-time money basically to recover from this horrible mess that we're in. And then we can do a lot of hard door knocking for 2 summers and get have the DFL take back over and get the place finally cleaned up. that's the way I feel about it.
I love that strategy. You are right on point.
Yes. Also, I always explain when the tax comes up, because people say, oh, she's a Democrat, she just wants to raise taxes. I always remind people that what the fourth tier tax did was it picked a certain level, and this is what I think what you're talking about, basically making like a fifth tier. It picks a certain level, but below that level, your taxes don't change. So if I'm making $150,000, my taxes don't change. And with the fourth tier, I think it kicks in at like $153,000. So if I make $155,000, my taxes go up on only $2,000 that I make, not $153,000. So that's something that I just think – we need to do the due diligence in making sure everyone understands that, because when they do, they agree with it, you know?
Right, and I think that's part of the Republican strategy, is like to confuse people, right?
Yeah.
And like, so, like my bill, was if you make a taxable income of $500,000 or greater, then we switched it to $1 million or greater. And the truth is what people didn't realize was that Trump gave tax cuts, and all we're doing, you know, a couple of years ago, and all we're doing is bringing it up to that same level it used to be.
Right.
So we weren't even increasing it more. And you have to have a taxable income, which means that if you have anything that offsets those taxable income and you fall below that threshold, you don't even get taxed, even if you might have made $700,000, even at the $500,000 threshold. And if you had deductions that brought you below the $500,000, you don't pay any additional taxes. And so I think that when people understand the details of it, then they're like, oh, well, that makes sense, right? And it was such a small number of people at the $1 million level, taxable income level. There was such a small number of people that was impacted, but it was going to generate huge amounts of revenues that would have really helped Minnesotans.
Yeah, I think it's something like 5,500 people or something in Minnesota that make that much money or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
It was a very small number. And don't quote me on the exact number, because once we changed the levels, I couldn't remember the exact ones, but you're right. It was a very small number of people.
I'm going off of old numbers too, but, I already asked you, do you feel like everything's so contentious between the two parties? And in Minnesota, you know, it's just got to have felt like banging your head against the wall. I know Kelly Morrison pretty well. I was her first campaign manager and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, she sometimes, you know, she won't ever say anything bad, at least publicly, but she kind of describes it as, sometimes it's just like we're banging our head against a wall. Do you feel like things are easing up? I'm so surprised at how well these bills are passing here in the last minutes that there's got to be some good feeling between Democrats and Republicans going on at the moment. Do you feel that?
I do. You know, it's interesting because they will stand up and filibuster for an entire day, 14 hours. We, you know, will go through days of just like frivolous amendments that actually, you know, doesn't actually have anything to do with the content of the bill. And then in the end, when we finally get through everything, then the Republicans will stand up and say, well, this is a good bill. It's missing some things. And I just think like, it's really interesting for me to actually hear that, to see that you're fighting us really hard on this, but yet you will stand up, because we did as inclusive as possible around some of the issues that we think are really important to both parties, right? Because I think that at the end of the day, we all want Minnesotans to do well. We want Minnesotans to thrive. And that means sometimes we're going to have shared policies that might be very similar. And so We tried really hard to think about how we can take care of all Minnesotans, not just Democrat or Minnesotans, but all Minnesotans. And so, you know, I do feel hopeful when I actually when I hear those little bits of comments at the end of a bill hearing or, you know, a floor discussion, and they make those types of comments. That gives me quite a bit of hope around what we possibly can do if we put the partisanship aside and really focus on how do we take care of Minnesotans.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad. That makes me feel good, too. Well, you know what? I can hear paper shuffling. I know that you're probably trying to read something while you're doing this. I know you're very busy. I'm going to let you go have fun with your colleagues. And I thank you so much for giving us the time in this busy, busy week.
Well, Ashley, thank you for having us on, because the truth is our work doesn't matter if we're not letting Minnesotans know what is going on. And we have a lot to be proud of. But there is, like you said, a lot of work that we still need to do. If we really want to make the changes that we want to see in our state, we do have to think a year or two down the road to say, what do we need to do in order to create a structure in which we will be able to really do right by Minnesotans? And so we really appreciate the time to be able to share what we've been doing and to continue to know that we will all work together to create the future that we want for our state.
Absolutely. And we want to do that at AM 950 as well. So we thank you again. That's Representative Collie Herr. She's the House Majority Whip on the Minnesota House floor. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you hopefully sometime soon. She's gone. I was talking to no one. All right. Well, we should take a short break here, and we'll come back for the ending of the show. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. If you want to make a call, it's 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We got a couple minutes left if you have anything to say. Otherwise, we'll be back in a couple minutes.
No matter what.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Patrick's been producing on the board for the last 2 hours at least. I think Brett's going to be in for Matt tomorrow, Brett Johnson tomorrow, and then I'm back on Monday, and then Brett on Tuesday, and then me on Wednesday, and then Matt will be back on Thursday. So, I thought that was a nice interview with the House Majority Whip. Actually, I had no idea, and I don't think anyone had any idea that the Republicans were sometimes complimenting the bills after they were passed. Huge surprise, because they seem to hate everything. they apparently – and I think, too, part of it is that they realize that these bills are going to help Minnesotans. And like I said earlier, I think they're starting to see that people are paying closer attention. And if they block things that are obviously going to make things better for Minnesotans, I think they're starting to realize that that's going to hurt them. I'm sincerely surprised by how much they're caving on so many things and how these bills are actually getting passed before the end of session. And I'm really sincerely surprised at how they're turning out. They're turning out a lot better than I really thought there would be impossible impasses. And there still may be with talking about police reform and things like that. A better term would be transforming policing. Because that's basically what we're talking about. I'll give you an update on something I talked about a few weeks ago when I was on the air. I don't expect you to remember, but out where I live in District 33, the Minnesota Republic District 33 committee wanted to have a fundraiser for basically for themselves and their candidates. And they put out a flyer and an email, and they had the logos of local police firefighting and first responders. And they said, hey, bring your kids, climb around on a fire truck. You know, the police chief will be there. Look at their squad car, and the firemen are going to be there. And the only problem is they sent that out, but they never asked the police or fire department if they were going to come out or if they were cool with that. So what I did was I sent a letter to them. I sent a letter to the fire department and the police department in a couple places around where I live. And I said, hey, did you realize that these guys put out this flyer? And because I was pretty sure that they didn't. As a matter of fact, a few of us that I work with in our committee were pretty sure that they didn't realize that, because we know that neither the police or fire or first responders are partisan. They're very careful to not be partisan. You know, I mean, I always had to be careful when I talked to them, because they wanted to talk, but they don't, you know, they rarely want like you to take a picture with them, because, you know, they don't want to be seen as supporting you as a Democratic candidate or a Republican candidate. So I was pretty sure they didn't realize what was going on. Well, about, I don't know, a week or two after I sent that letter, my phone rang. I was in the parking lot, and the phone rings, and it's the police chief. And I'm, you know, I just got off my motorcycle, and I'm like, oh, did I put my tabs on? Oh, man, well, I'm in trouble, because it's the police chief, and I'm just getting off my motorcycle in the parking lot at my business. And he goes, yeah, I got your letter. And I was like, oh, right. You got my letter. And he said, yeah, no, you were right. We didn't realize that. And then I got a call from them, and they said, can I send you some information about it? And they sent me the information, and I immediately saw that they were doing a fundraiser, and the money was not going toward the police department. So I told them, no, I can't come. And then they called me again and said, well, could you maybe just like bring your squad car? You know, just stop by for a few minutes. I know that you said you can't. And he said, no, I can't. I can't come. But the flyer did go out before he was told what it was. And when the first call came, they were very elusive in what it was supposed to be. So I thought that was quite interesting news. They completely got caught. They sent the email out again, and they did not include the logos. But they were still saying, you know, oh, come and bring your kids. It happened on the 14th. I didn't, frankly, check on it. I didn't care enough to check on it, but because I know there were no fire engines there and no police cars, because they all refused to go out there. So just so that you know, that's how things work in the small level of politics. I just think that's an interesting story on that level, so I wanted to let you know about it and give you an update on how it turned out. That's it for us. Like I said, Brett's going to be in tomorrow, and I'll be back on Monday and Wednesday, and then Matt will be back next Thursday, the 1st of July. So please have a good weekend, and I will talk to you on Monday, the AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.